Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Well, this is a great way to get started, and I haven't even won all my games yet. It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans, and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, where I'm going to talk about parking my car next to the bar, since we're going to mask our natural accents and try to fake some other kind of accent. Brian Kelly's Southern accent, Ari Wasserman, is the worst since...
Was that on purpose? Or was he like trying to fit in and didn't think anyone would notice?
I believe they call that code switching, where you try to talk like the people you're around. And I believe he tried to pronounce Tigers the way Ed Orgeron did, the way the good Lord intended. Tigers. But Brian Kelly's not built to say Tigers.
I don't know if you know this about me, but my mother's Israeli. Ah. So my mom is from Israel and my dad is from America. So my mom has a very thick accent, even though she's been here for more than 30 years, and it remains. And when she's around her family who still live in Israel, my father's name is Bob. She calls him Bob. Like, Bob. She goes back into Israeli accent mode when she's around her family. So is that what we're talking about here? I think that's code switching.
So my original accent when I was a kid growing up in Columbia, South Carolina, sounded something like this. I sounded like this. We're going to go up the road. We fixing to do this, that sort of thing. And then I moved to the Keys when I was 7. And the kids all made fun of me, so I stopped talking like that. And now I sound like I'm from nowhere. But if I'm in the Carolinas or in Georgia or Alabama for more than 3-4 days, it starts to come out. But Brian Kelly's not from any of those places. I don't know if he's trying to fit in or if he just got caught in his throat because he's heard Ed Orgeron say it so many times. And he's like, well, maybe I need to say it like he said it. I don't know. But... We are going to preview the conference championship games, but Ari hasn't had a chance to fire off any takes about all these coaching changes. He wants to do that. And I got accent takes because I mean that is a bad is I don't know. I'm assuming he's attempting a Cajun accent, which is different than a Southern accent, obviously.
Here's the thing too, and I'm just gonna say it. This is podcasting. We can just talk and feel like this is the safe space, right?
Yeah, it's a safe space.
Ed Orgeron is an extremely likable human being, regardless of what you think about him as a football coach, which I do think that he won a national championship, so he's not the worst coach on the face of the earth. He's right. A very likable person, I think. Like a random fan who isn't a fan of LSU or isn't even a fan of the SEC, I think in my experience would tend to like him. Would you agree with that?
If you made a cartoon where Ed Orgeron was the main character, talking like he talks, looking like he looks, acting like he acts, it would be an extremely popular cartoon. He'd probably be able to sell a lot of cereal as a cereal mascot as well as a cartoon.
And I know that a lot of that is accent-based.
He's a human cartoon character, and I say that with absolute affection.
But it's gotten to the point, too, where the affection that you say it with is met with people didn't like to see him lose the way they would like to see Bama lose. And he was the head coach of an LSU program that was hated by a lot of people. I think that people liked him more than they hated LSU. You can agree to disagree with that. I think that's true. Now,
I think you're right about that.
The reason why I bring that up is because Brian Kelly is a very unlikable coach. And I'm not correct. Saying that, you know, I like him or dislike him. I've never met the man. But based on his temperament and the fact that none of his coaching assistants wanted to join him at LSU and some of the stories that you hear about the man.
Also, by the way, what happened to Nick Saban when he went to LSU? Nobody came from Michigan State.
Yeah, maybe people just don't want to have an easy time recruiting. I mean, I don't know. But the fact that he did that makes it harder to swallow because I just don't think people like him very much.
Well, I would agree with that. I think he would tell you that. I think he would agree with that. I don't think he was trying to do that accent, but man, that video is unfortunate. Mike Bunt, by the way, you can thank him for that video. He's the one who put that out into the world. All right, let's listen to a few of the worst Southern accents in movie history and see where this stacks up. Nick Cage in Con Air, supposed to be from Alabama.
What you looking at, punk?
Nothing, I was just admiring your cage.
But one wrong flight.
Stewardess?
That doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound like Nick Cage from Alabama. He ain't from Demopolis. He ain't from Mobile. He ain't from Selma, where my mom grew up. He's not from any of those places. Ari's dead. Ari's lost.
Oh, I thought you were going to play another clip. But yeah, no, okay.
Well, I'm going to play another clip. But
I thought we were doing it in succession. I was not lost. Sorry. I was waiting for the next show. Good.
Okay, well, I'll give you the next one. The Devil's Advocate. Keanu Reeves, Al Pacino. Spoiler alert, Al Pacino's the devil. It can't spoil it because it's over 20 years old. Filmed in Gainesville, Florida, which is like 30 miles from Ocala, Florida. So Al Pacino spent like at least, I don't know how many days he spent on set, but I would think at least 2 weeks in Gainesville, 30 miles from Ocala. And nobody bothered to tell him that Ocala is pronounced Ocala because he pronounced it Ocala in the movie. But he's Al Pacino. His accent in the movie was Al Pacino. Keanu tried to pull off the ACR, the Alachua County resident. It did not go well.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I know you've spent all morning listening to Mr. Broigo talk. I know you're hungry. What I need to tell you won't take very long at all. I don't like Alexander Cohen.
He's supposed to sound like the people who live 5 miles west of me. 5 miles west of me, it gets real feed store real fast. You don't say like with a long I. Like is lack.
Like.
You would spell it L-A-C-K, probably. Lack.
Like.
It's not like. You don't do that.
Yeah, that you're the much bigger expert on Southern accents than I am. So let's keep riding.
That's what we got, Ari. Those are the ones I think are.
Well, you're not going to play back Farmer Fran from Waterboy, or is that just not an accent at all?
Farmer Fran's accent was actually pretty close to the real thing.
Yeah, I don't know if
Farmer Fran's was a lot closer to that accent that he was trying to hit than Keanu's was to the one that he was trying to hit.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's offensive to people from Louisiana. It is just very funny.
In fact, now that I think about it, going back to Nick Cage, his accent in Raising Arizona was a better Southern accent than the guy who was supposed to be from Alabama. So High in Raising Arizona had a halfway decent Southern accent.
You know, from Arizona. I wasn't anywhere. I'm nowhere near from the South, and I've spent just, you know, my time on trips through there. But like when you get outside of a Columbus, Ohio, where I used to live, you get some pretty crazy accents. I remember when I first moved to Columbus from Phoenix, and I don't know what I was doing, but I was in a gas station and I was outside of Columbus, like on a recruiting story, like 20 miles south or something. And I went into a gas station and I asked the person who was working at the gas station, do you guys have any Arizona iced tea? Which, as you know by now about me, is my favorite iced tea. And the man looked at me and he goes, son.
You are a human cartoon character, Ari.
Yeah, I mean, I like Arizona iced tea. There's nothing Ari, weird about
the,
that.
The bumpkin from Arizona coming up to ask everybody where their Arizona iced tea is.
Hey, where I'm from and me liking Arizona iced tea is no connection. If it was called Toledo iced tea, I would like it.
I believe Arizona iced tea is manufactured by something called like Voltaggio and Sons. It does not sound like an Arizona-based company. But
yeah, maybe. I like the name of it. But I said, sir, do you know where the Arizona iced tea is? And the guy looked at me, and I'm going to butcher this accent because I'm not very good at impressions. But he goes, son, you ain't going to find anything like that out here in the great state of Ohio.
Is that like when and people that was call just it like, Missouri?
And he said, oh, hi. And I was like, holy crap, what am I doing here? Like, because I was still new to the area. Like, I was still Phoenix boy. I was just like, and thank God that's not what Columbus is like. But that was like my first week there.
Southerners think they have the market cornered on rural. But I've noticed traveling around the country.
No, there's plenty of rural in the Midwest and on the East Coast.
Rural is rural wherever you are.
You ever been on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, bud?
Yeah. Pennsylvania, you can find a lot of rural. Oregon, you can find a lot of rural. It's all out there somewhere. So don't think you got to be in Mississippi to get rural. We'll be right back after these words.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Ari. We've not talked on the podcast. You and I have talked off air a little bit, but we've not really talked about some of this very earth-shattering news that has happened here in the last week. And I've been thinking about this Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley thing quite a bit, and they've obviously been villainized for taking these new jobs. But I want to ask people to, and you can villainize them if you want, and if you're an Oklahoma fan or Notre Dame fan, I completely understand. But I want to ask people to put themselves, just imagine it's their job. Imagine that somebody comes along and offers you more money to do the same job, and your company might match, which is nice. But if you go to the other place, you might have an easier time reaching your ultimate goal, and you're making quite a bit more money than you're making now. So who would turn that down under most circumstances, Ari?
It's the Rudy factor. That's what I call this. It's the fans looking at football through the eyes of Rudiger. Like, their coach is supposed to love their program the way that they do.
As much as they do. Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, it's not a rational thing. Now, I think, first of all, the way that some of these went down, it just, you would think that they might have handled it more smoothly. I don't know if there's a great way to handle it, you know.
I don't think there's a good way to handle any of it in the age of the early signing period, because it's got to be so bang bang. You know, yeah, you got to move so fast.
And I don't know, maybe the NCAA could like create a rule, and this would be super weird, but you could coach a team through the playoff if this were to happen in another sense, but also recruit for the other team. You know, or like a way to like make it so the transition's easier, and whoever the new coach is at the new program can begin recruiting for the other team or the team that's currently being coached. Like, I don't know what the handle this is like, because if Notre Dame does, I don't think they're going to make the playoff, and I don't think they're good enough to win a national title. But if they were to make the playoff this year, it does seem like making the playoff is such a hard thing to do. It would be almost insane to not take that opportunity to do it. And like, I don't know what happened behind the scenes with Marcus Freeman and Luke Fickell, and whether or not like Luke was the type of person that was just like, I'm not leaving my team until and then the time had something to do with the hire that they made. But it is just an odd circumstance. And Brian Kelly just doesn't really seem like a soft, compassionate person. So it makes it even worse. Now, I think that, you know.
Well, and he's done this before. He did it to Cincinnati.
Yeah. And well, but do people care? Like, I saw a lot of outrage about like, well, he spent 5 or 10, 12 minutes in there. Like, what do people want? Like an hour long discussion, like Q&A?
No, I mean, it, if you want to answer questions from players, that probably would be nice.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. If you want to let him yell at you, let him yell at you.
Yeah.
You can go rest on a pile of money afterward. I mean,
it's funny because
they're gonna private jet you back to Baton Rouge and everybody will be nice to you there. So let everybody get their feelings out.
Yeah. It's an unwinnable situation, but it's also understandable because I understand completely why both of these coaches took their jobs. Like, I think that both of them were no-brainers, and that might be offensive to some people because they both left really, really good jobs, but I think USC with the right coach is a more attractive job than Oklahoma, and I think that LSU is a more attractive job if your goal is to win a national championship. And, like, I was listening to your podcasts all week with fear of missing out up to my neck, like it was like an ulcer coming up, and it's just like I want to bang these things out because it's just like – Brian Kelly has clearly gotten Notre Dame to maybe the cusp of their peak as a program, right? And he would resent the idea.
Their peak in 2021, not because, I mean, obviously they were the best program in college football for a significant time. Well,
things changed. Do you think that Notre Dame's actual ceiling as a program now is Bama? Because I don't.
No, I don't either.
So I think that they're on the cusp, if not at their peak as a program. And Brian Kelly would resent any insinuation at any playoff media availability that his teams lacked the talent to beat a team like Alabama. But in my opinion,
his actions tell you that that's
insinuate
what he
that he believes that. Yeah, this is because, like, why else are people going to say? Well, there was a rumor that he was going to make $15 million a year. That's not happening. We don't know exactly how much he was making at Notre Dame, but. Maybe he just wanted to go to a place that could build a roster.
Notre Dame would have paid him very similarly. I don't think this was a move about money. I think this was a move about...
I want to be able to build a roster that resembles the 2019 LSU roster, and I could never do this in a million years at Notre Dame because of the geography, the academic limitations, the fact that we're not in a conference, all these different things played into a part. And yes, I understand that it's harder to make a national championship run in the SEC because the regular season games are harder. Everybody knows that. But in a world of an expanded playoff, and a fact that, and I had this stat in one of my stories, the Notre Dame recruiting class in 2022 was a top five class currently. Two top 100 players. In the same exact class, there are 7 top 100 players in the state of Louisiana, all of which are either crystal balled or were going or are going to LSU before all this coaching stuff happened. Like, you are automatically in the top 10 at LSU if you're even remotely good at recruiting. So, to me, you did everything you can. You made Notre Dame what you were. Was he the all-time winningest coach in Notre Dame history now? Like,
yeah,
you know, maybe that'll get broken one day, but what are you going to do? Keep banging your head against the wall, or do you actually want to break through and win a national title and get paid more and try something new and live somewhere new? It makes sense to me.
Lincoln Riley can say all he wants that he was fine with moving to the SEC, but his actions suggest he wasn't.
Well, what would you do?
I'm the one who thinks Oklahoma will actually be able to build the roster it needs once it is in the SEC.
I'm not saying that Oklahoma won't be able to build their roster. When Lincoln Riley was at Oklahoma, he was putting together a 2023 class that was going to potentially win the recruiting crown. Of course.
Ari, you're different than me though. Like, you'd rather live in LA than Norman, Oklahoma. I would rather live in Norman, Oklahoma than LA.
But that's not what it's not even about where I'd rather live. Of course, beaches in Laguna are nice, but that's not what That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is I agree with you that Oklahoma is not Notre Dame. Oklahoma has the goods and the ability to recruit Alabama-like classes if they get the right person in. And Lincoln Riley, whether you like him or not, had us building or was building a 2023 class at Oklahoma that already had four top 100 players or five top 100 players, including three five-star prospects from the state of California. So he was doing it already. But what would you rather do? USC and get 12 top 100 players without trying, live in the sunshine, be in a conference that you're going to completely dominate and make the playoff and try to be the coolest team in the West Coast? Or would you rather go with Oklahoma to the SEC and have to try 100 times harder to achieve the same amount of things that you can achieve at USC while also making a boatload more money in a city that is awesome to be rich in? What would you rather do? Just do extra steps because it feels good and you're a glutton for punishment? Here's the thing, and I don't know if you're with me on this, but I'm like, can you tell I missed being on this podcast with you?
I can tell, and this is why I'm just letting you have the floor.
But the other thing too is what's everybody likes to talk and to fantasize about what it would be like if Urban Meyer actually went to USC, right? Because you're trying to think of what it would be like if a rock star coach with a history of winning and a reputation that would get people to flock to him at his program would do. And it was never going to happen, but it was fun to fantasize about because, in my opinion, if Urban Meyer would have gone to SC, they would have been in the playoff at least 3 years or less. Name another hire within reason that USC could have made that would have even come close to matching the same Urban Meyer-ness that Lincoln Riley brings to the table. Because to me, I think that maybe Nick Saban...
Brian Kelly.
No.
No?
No.
Wow. Okay.
I don't think it's even close. Listen. Lincoln Riley is young. He's handsome. He wears a visor. He coached Heisman Trophy winners. He's gone. You're laughing at me like that's not a trend in coaching. Go look at Coach Hansoms in the NFL now all over the place. And
hey, listen, there's only one coach who wore a visor in my mind.
Yeah, so. I know. Who was that, Andy? You know what I mean? But he's got the California cool peace sign thing up. But also he has the testimony of running
that
a program.
That would be the fight on. It has nothing to do with fighting, not with peace.
I know. I understand. But I like doing the piece. Also, just as a rant on the side, there's nothing cooler in all of sports than when a speedster breaks away from the defense and waltzes into the end zone with the peace sign up. Just quietly, no celebration, just peace. But he has Heisman Trophy winners, Andy. Three of them.
That he does.
He's been to the playoffs, so not only does he bring that offensive guru genius that everybody in LA is going to want to play for, it's not just all reputation. It's not all personality. It's also testimony of success. And also the way that he left Oklahoma makes him kind of the bad guy a little bit. And in LA, that's a sexy thing to have. I don't think Brian Kelly comes close to sniffing his farts when it comes to who would be more impactful from a meteor standpoint landing in LA. I don't think there's anybody in college football outside of Nick Saban that could have done this.
So Lincoln Riley is your sexy basic cable anti-hero is what you're trying to say.
I don't think that there's another coach in college football.
He's like a hot Walter White, except he's coaching football instead of cooking meth.
I don't think there's another coach in college football outside of Nick Saban that could have this much of an impact in recruiting the way he will immediately and into the foreseeable future. I think that Lincoln Riley, you know how we talk about the cool kids table? I think Lincoln Riley put at USC at that table in 5 minutes. The second
He made fetch happen?
There's no other coach in college football, in my opinion, that could have done what he did. Just based on who he is and his reputation and where he was, the offensive guru. I mean, I don't think Ryan Day could. I don't think anybody else could. Especially in a place like Southern California that's known for five-star quarterbacks. And 48 hours after he did it, he's got the number two player in the entire country in 2023 behind only Arch Manning committed. It's going to be, they're going to have more talent. If I were Mario Cristobal, I would leave the Pac-12. Am I overstating it?
Scared of Lincoln Riley. Mario Cristobal ain't scared of Lincoln
Riley. I'm not saying scared. But Oregon was had a
until Lincoln Riley proves that he can recruit the big guys who are good, because Guess who can? Mario Cristobal.
Yeah, no, I know. Offensive line and defensive line.
You can recruit all those really pretty, flashy, fast skill guys. Do you know how useful they are if you can't block or tackle?
Yeah. I know.
I mean, the 2018 Oklahoma offensive line that played in front of Kyler Murray, still trying to block Quinn Williams. Still trying.
Didn't Oklahoma have a pretty solid offensive line the last few years, though?
Did they? Did it look pretty solid when it played LSU?
Also, there's a million players that are closer now that are just going to go there. Like, if Ernest Green had another 2 weeks of Lincoln Riley existing, he probably would end up at USC. Top 100 offensive linemen that didn't even consider them, and he lived in LA now. Like, okay. I think that they'll get their guys.
I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see him build lines of scrimmage that can play with Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, LSU. I want to see it.
I think that he won't only be able to get the best players in California. I think that USC became a national brand that can recruit Texas and can recruit Florida and Ohio. Like, I think this could be the beginning of a juggernaut.
Pete Carroll. I think this is the closest they've been
since Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
And somebody said, well, what about Lane Kiffin? You know, that Lane Kiffin was probably a little bit too immature for the job, but even this Lane Kiffin, he has the sexiness and the look and, you know, the name about it, but he doesn't have the testimony for results.
Ari, who's the sexiest coach since you?
I didn't mean sexy, like physically sexy, but if you want to play it, I meant like sexy, like brand name.
I'm curious. I just, you, who do I think the you want to sexiest? Define it, we're not into labels here, but who's the sexiest
my
coach?
My fiance has a crush on a few NFL coaches.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like 30-something NFL coaches.
Matt LaFleur from Green Bay
on the elliptical machine.
Could live in my house if he wanted to. Yeah.
But who are the sexiest college coaches, Ari? Let's do it. Random ranking. Do it.
I'm sure. Okay, like actually handsome we're doing, right?
No, however you would like to define sexy. You could define it as...
Like which one would be like the best on a dating show or which one is like the best sexy brand?
Ari, however you want to define it. The sexy brand sounds good. Let's go.
At the end
that.
Of the show, sexy we'll brand. Go back and forth on who we think's the most handsome.
Okay. Sam Pittman, obviously.
Sexiness in the sport right now. I might say number one, Lincoln Riley.
Okay.
Number two... No, number one's Nick Saban, because that name is a meteor hitting the earth.
Him move in the commercial with Dion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two would be Lincoln Riley. Three would be Kirby Smart. Four would be...
Is Dabo sexy?
Yeah. Dab, because when I think of sexy, I think of if you hired this coach at a new random place... The impact he would have right out of the gate without having to do anything.
Where's Ryan Day fall on that list for you?
Somewhere like in between 5 and 10, probably.
How about Harbaugh and his Lululemon cutoffs because he set them on fire?
I think that
he got a lot sexier about 5 days ago, right?
He did. Yeah, he's been dieting. He looks good. Bill Landis made a really good point to me. Ryan Day is like 1-4 in his 5 biggest games as Ohio State's head coach now. So, like, I am pumping the brakes a little bit on, like, where things are after.
I'm going to squeeze this hot take out of you eventually. I knew it.
What? No, 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 no.
You didn't
even
see me building my case for that.
I would take Ryan Day in a heartbeat still. I think that he is 1 or 2 more weird seasons away from being in an uncomfortable position, though. Which is funny to think he just lost
his
first
one Big Ten game.
I know.
One. And they say SEC people are hard on their
Ohio State's an SEC program in the Big Ten. You know that.
I know. You're right. Ohio State.
And
Clemson.
Like everybody freaked out at the tweet that I made after the game about how there's going to be wholesale changes. I bet you Ohio State got 10 assistants. I bet you they'll have only 3 back next year. Watch, they're going to clear that whole. They're going to clear that whole place out. You'll see.
Well, if you change defensive coordinators, then you probably open the door to changing most of the defensive staff. If you're changing offensive line coach, you know that's
type of loss
more than
is
half
the
right
type
now,
of
right
loss
there.
That Ohio State cleans house over. You'll see. They demoted Kerry Combs after a week two loss to Oregon. And that was a guy who helped Ohio State win a national championship and came back from the NFL to be the defensive coordinator. Lasted, what, 12 games? No, it was a pandemic year. 8 games before he lost his job? You'll see. Everybody was like, oh, this guy's an asshole. You know, Ohio State people are spoiled. It's like, no, it's just the facts if you've paid attention to what the program has done for the last decade. So, but well, yeah, Ryan Day is out, like, of the...
That's what people said when I started saying right after the recruiting comment from Dan Mullen, this could be it. And people are like, are you crazy? Look at his room. I'm like, no. This is how that goes downhill. Yeah, sometimes you just know how a place works.
I couldn't have run to my keyboard faster when I heard him say that.
Yeah. So sometimes you just know how a place works. Ari, we have games to preview. There are championship games. There are playoff.
Before we go, though, Andy, do you think I'm nuts about USC? Because you didn't really push back on anything I said. So if you think I'm crazy, I need you to tell me that I'm crazy. Like, the fact that I think that USC is a top three position in America, maybe, or top four, or at least top five, no matter what, playoff within 3 years.
I don't think you're crazy. Again, I want to see a Lincoln Riley team that is dominant on both lines of scrimmage. I want to see that before I will then say, yes, Ari, they can do anything they want to do. I need to see that first.
Because you know on this podcast, and anybody who's listened to us now for the last year and a half knows that I've been an avid Texas truther. Is that the word?
Yep.
I am also a USC truther.
Yes, you are.
And people didn't know that because I wasn't as outwardly excited about them because they had Clay Helton and there was nothing to talk about. But USC has the best possible hire they could have made. I'm not saying that Lincoln Riley's the best possible coach, or is going to be the best possible
for that program.
For that program, for in this moment, they couldn't have hired anybody better, active or not. I think you can make the case that Lincoln Riley is 85 to 90% of what Urban would have been if they hired him, and he hasn't won a national championship yet. So I am 100,000% in on USC. I don't know what I'm going to think about them going into next year, but mark my words, I will do any bet you want. USC will be in the playoff by year 3 and possibly year 2.
Well, we have several years to come up with what the stakes for that bet will be, but I'm good with that.
You can make big stakes.
I think you're probably right that within 2 or 3 years they should be. If they aren't, then this didn't work because that's why they did this. But I think you're right about this. I think that's entirely probable, and I think...
Yeah, the conference sucks too. That helps.
The issue that I keep talking about, can they get people better on the lines of scrimmage? I think they can. I think they can get the raw talent in they need, and I think they can develop it. So, and I don't even know who they're hiring for all of their assistant positions. I just know that there will be a lot of people who want to come work there, who want to get on the train, who feel the same way you do. There's a lot of people in the business who feel the same way you do. So we'll find out. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
But USC is not playing this weekend.
They are.
The two teams in the Pac-12.
They are playing this weekend.
That's right. They are playing this weekend. USC is playing this weekend because Cal had to postpone the game. That's right. USC is playing this weekend, but not in a game that actually means anything.
Yeah.
Utah, Oregon. Utah once again favored. Utah's a 2.5-point favorite in this game. They were about a 2.5-3-point favorite in the first matchup.
It's the same thing, yeah.
demolished Oregon. Is Oregon actually going to show up this time?
Is that the problem?
You think Utah's just that much better?
They kicked the crap. They Michiganed Ohio State. They Michiganed Ohio Stated them. Did I say that right?
But
they blew them off the ball.
But that's what Oregon did to Ohio State. So they have that in them.
Or maybe Ohio State's just soft. That's possible. Boy,
all that goodwill you built up in Columbus with Landis and on that 4-6 with A to B podcast that you guys do, you've just
I'm a homer, flushed bro.
Down the toilet
I'm
on the show today.
Huge homer.
Flushed it
or
down
about,
the toilet.
How about I react appropriately to the circumstances that are in front of me, which is they're a soft team that isn't very good and they don't deserve to be in the playoff. Michigan whacks that ass. Jim Harbaugh, I think, got back all of his credibility. I'm not going to be down his throat. I love the coaching staff. Love to see what they're going to do now in the Big Ten Championship. And you know what? For all we know, Michigan might be playing in the national champ. They can't beat Georgia, but they might be playing in the national title game this year. But this game is tricky, Andy, because I've said on the podcast, and everybody says that it's cliche, it's hard to beat the same team twice. Oregon went up to Salt Lake City the last time they played. Utah was wearing alternate uniforms with a battleship on their helmet. They were honoring student athletes who had been murdered. Like, there was a lot of emotion in the building. It was packed. It was cold. Like, all the things that could have been going into Utah's favor went into their favor that night. But Utah kicked the crap out of them. So the adjustments, it's just like, I guess maybe, and Dan Rubenstein from the Solid Verbal said this, I thought it was interesting. Oregon has all the ability to adjust. Like, what does Utah do in the film sessions? They just go, we'll do that again, you know? And the spread,
yeah,
it's like the spread is like begging you to take Utah because they already kicked the crap out of them. But it's just like, shouldn't what they did travel?
Utah has three backs, each who have gained more than 460 yards. The lowest average yards per carry of those three is 5.8. That's Tavion Thomas, who actually has run for the most yards. But TJ Pledger averages 7 yards a carry. Micah Bernard averages 5.9. These guys maul people. And then what is Utah's record if Cam Rising starts the entire season? Like, are we talking about them as a potential playoff team?
I don't know.
They lost to BYU and San Diego State early. Like, if they just had the loss to Oregon State sitting there,
I mean, I think they would still have probably.
We would be talking about them making the playoff with a win here.
Yeah, I mean, their losses are weird, right? I mean, BYU, San Diego State, and Oregon State, all of which are pretty competent teams. So I don't know.
They're perfectly acceptable losses.
Losses, yeah.
But it's a case where they made a quarterback change early in the season that feels like it turned everything around.
Yeah, I will admit something to you, and I'm going to be vulnerable with you and everybody listening. It is driving me absolutely bonkers, up the wall, insane that this playoff field is made up of a bunch of teams that are outside of the top 10 in the composite rankings. It's like I am going to be rooting for Alabama on Saturday just so there's another team in the top 5 of the recruiting rankings or composite rankings in the playoff, because this is completely unacceptable.
I don't to my think thesis, you understand. Stars don't matter. It's all about grit.
Do you understand what's happening this year? This year is going to be the thing that people reference in 7 years from now when they're still young.
Ari,
and stars don't matter.
Ari, let me throw this out there. Do you know the average age of Oklahoma State's defense? Their starters.
No, this is good. Tell me.
So like I'm looking up the average now, but I want to say it's over 22. Like, they have some 23-year-olds on their starting defense. They're very old. Like, you'll never see another non-BYU starting defense that old in college football. And I will tell you that a grown-ass man, even if he was a 3-star, I will take him almost any time over a 5-star boy.
When do they cross into man?
What's that?
When do they cross over into being a man in your definition of that?
21, 22. Like, a 21 or a 22-year-old physically is different than an 18 or 19. Now, there are some great 18. Like, Penei Sewell at 18, I'll take him against anybody.
Yeah, but that's what 5-stars are, though. They're freaks.
But not all of them. Sometimes 5-stars need to be developed. And Sometimes five stars go to practice and get their butts whipped by old guys on their team. And that's what I think is going on right now. Look at how old these good teams are.
Well, because there has to be an explanation as to what's happening.
Let's move on to the we can move on to the Big 12 title game. Oklahoma State, Baylor.
Well, who do you have in the Pac 12?
I'm going to take Utah. I mean, you can't just physically dominate a team like that and me think something drastically different is going to happen next time.
I'm with you.
So, all right, Oklahoma State, 5.5-point favorite against Baylor. Baylor, very cagey about Bohannon's status for this game. If he can't play, I have very little hope for Baylor. I know Baylor's got a very good defense, but Spencer Sanders has taken such good care of the ball this year, and I don't know there's as much you can do if you don't have that dynamic threat at quarterback against this Oklahoma State defense. They are so solid. They're always in the right place. Jim Knowles' scheme is not what everybody in the Big 12 is used to seeing. It's not the bring three, drop eight. It's a confusing coverages. They like to mess with the quarterback's head. I love watching this team play. Malcolm Rodriguez, the heart and soul of the defense. You know, he's an old guy. You know, you look back and you do his year by year. He's played in five different seasons. And so I think that experience just carries them through. They are old. And I think that is really the answer to your question. The super seniors, the extra year of eligibility.
It's the COVID stuff.
The fact that the fact that teams are, and here's the other thing about that. The teams that typically recruit five-star players that have the top five type recruiting classes, they didn't have difference makers coming back. Their difference makers went to the NFL just like they always do, as third-year players or fourth-year players. Some of these other teams had some difference makers who maybe they were going to get drafted last year, but it might have been in the seventh round, and they said, you know what? I want to take another shot. And oh, by the way, NIL is starting, so maybe I can make some dough.
It kind of seems like it came at the perfect intersection between Ohio State and Alabama losing a lot of their rosters from last year's national championship game.
And Clemson.
And Clemson kind of rebounding a little bit. And then also a bunch of rosters who are much older and have guys that wouldn't be on the team anymore if there was a regular year last year. Because there has to be an explanation for it. Because it's like I'm looking. I don't like know how old Michigan is, but Michigan beat the crap out of Ohio State. And it's like there's nothing about that that makes sense. Other than one team is soft and prepared, and one team was hard and prepared a lot harder. So, like, you know, I don't know how it all maps out, but the fact of the matter is you've got a playoff now where there's only one team potentially that is built like a normal team needs to be built to win a national championship, which means that there's going to be a team like Cincinnati or Michigan or Oklahoma State or somebody else like that in the national championship for the first time in how many years? Since Oregon in 2014?
Yeah, since you brought up Michigan, I'll ask you this. How many players who start on Michigan's offensive or defensive line by academic year are younger than a junior?
I don't know. That's a good question.
One.
There's on both one sides of the ball?
They have a sophomore at right guard. One.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's why. I mean, it's not all the reason why. Like, Aiden Hutchinson might be the best player in the country. Like, he should be a legitimate Heisman contender. He may be the number one pick in the draft. He may have overtaken Thibodeau as a potential number one pick in the draft. So they've also got top-end talent. That helps quite a bit.
Yeah. It's like part of me wonders, too. It's just like, what does that game mean for the years to come? Like, I don't know. Does it mean everything or does it mean nothing?
I think in terms of just giving Michigan hope, I think it does change things. I think it helps Harbaugh. You know, so when we did a live room the other night, one of our readers asked about Harbaugh's recruiting this year, and I said, you know, it's been pretty hard for him to recruit. they cut his pay in half. And, you know, you didn't know till really midway through the season that he's going to do a good enough job to keep the job. And so now they're kind of playing catch up, because if I was a top end type recruit, I would have been a little leery of, well, are they going to still be there? Now you know they're still going to be there, but you've only known that for what, 6 weeks?
Yeah.
So I think that they're going to, all of the indicators, the leading indicators, are going to begin pointing up for them. Now they have to do this again. I don't think they have to do it again next year, but they got to do it again within the next couple of years to keep it going that way.
Yeah.
But I do. It gives them hope. Now, here's the other thing. We're on to Michigan, Iowa. Michigan is a 10.5 point favorite against Iowa. This is the lowest over-under total of all the championship games at 43.5. I actually probably would take the under in this game, Ari.
Me too.
Because I think
score is going to be like,
Michigan will have a more difficult time scoring on Iowa than it did Ohio State. But I have no idea how Iowa will score at all.
Do you think that if I would have played that sentence you just said to you in September, you would have laughed at yourself?
Not about the Iowa part, but about the Michigan part?
Michigan would have a harder time scoring on Iowa than they did Ohio State. Just a weird year, man. I agree with that. I think the final score is going to be like 28 or 20 or 31 to 7. Like, I don't know. I don't know how Iowa is going to score an offensive touchdown in this game.
They better block a punt. That's all I got to say.
Block a punt every week. So, you know, maybe they'll get a starting field position at the 7 yard line and get in on fourth and goal. But like, it'll be, the only thing you have to consider is Michigan might be just emotionally depleted because of how that is
the one thing I am considering, Ari, because they've not been in this position before. They beat the Soviet team and now they got to play Finland feel to this, but the U.S. did beat Finland and win the gold in Lake Placid. So it is doable. It's not always that you just exhaust it. I think back to when Alabama had to play Texas in the national title game. Florida was the team that they had kind of been pushing toward all season. They finally beat them. And then that was the big question, actually, among Alabama coaches, that Saban's whole message during the prep for that national championship game was, you didn't finish the season by beating Florida. You can only finish the season by beating Texas. And so I imagine that there's been a lot of that type of language in Michigan practice this week. And it wouldn't shock me at all if they show a miracle before the game.
Yeah. I mean, if Michigan somehow loses to Iowa, I feel like it was all for nothing. So just go get the job done, win the Big Ten. And listen, this is Michigan's best shot in the foreseeable future of winning a playoff game. Because if they get matched up with Oklahoma State or they get matched up with Cincinnati, these are very winnable games for
Ari, Michigan. I think if Alabama – well, I don't think they'd get matched up. They wouldn't get matched up with Alabama if Alabama beat Georgia. But if there was some kind of chaos and a two-loss Alabama got in, or, you know, my weird scenario where Alabama loses in triple overtime on a call that everybody knows screwed them, and so they put them in the playoff to – as a
they still wouldn't be three.
Yeah, you're probably right. That's a long way of saying I think Michigan and Alabama would actually be a fun game this year.
Yeah. I think that Michigan, when they play or if they play Georgia, won't score.
Well, I don't know that anybody – there's a lot of teams that won't score against Georgia.
No, I know.
Michigan can score against Georgia. I think Michigan is better on offense than you think.
Yeah. Well,
they're more efficient. Like, way. Cade McNamara is a much more efficient quarterback than anybody gives. Cade McNamara and Stetson Bennett need to talk. Like, they're very underappreciated. Well, I wouldn't know about Cade McNamara.
He wasn't put in a situation where he had to make a play in the Ohio State game. So it'd be very interesting to see what would happen if Georgia, or when Georgia, stopped Michigan from getting 6 yards a carry and made him do something. I mean,
right.
At Michigan, the quarterback could have been me for all, you know, I mean, they ran down their throat. So you're not doing that against Georgia. So I just wonder if Michigan has the offensive firepower to score if you can shut down the running game.
All right, we got a couple more championship games to talk about.
We just broke down the national title game.
We did not. Not yet. All right, Ari. Let's talk about a game. Before we get to the big, big, big showdown in Atlanta, let's talk about a game that could have historic consequences. Houston at Cincinnati. Cincinnati is a 10.5-point favorite. I don't care if Cincinnati covers. They just got to win. I think they win, and they are in.
It's great. I'm with you. I'm excited to watch the game. You know, it's always kind of nerve-wracking, I guess, if you would be a fan of one of these teams where you get down to the end and you're in a game that you should win, but you never know what's going to happen until you get there. And it's like history. Well, I don't know why I just said that word. History is
historic history.
That's historic the best history, kind of history is on the line on Saturday. And, you know, if Cincinnati gets it done, hats off to them. Cause I feel like, I mean, what do you think if you came into the year you would have said was more impossible? Michigan playing for a national championship or getting into the playoff after beating Ohio State, or Cincinnati or a group of five team making the playoff? Cause both are happening in the same year, and it's pretty amazing.
Group of five team making the playoffs, I still would have said is more or less likely. So Cincinnati, we know, has a great defense. They are number three in the country behind Georgia and Wisconsin in yards per play allowed, one at 4.29. Houston is number nine in this category, Ari. They only allow 4.66 yards to carry. The number on this game is 53.5. There's a very good chance it's below that just because these two defenses are just slugging it out. And I think, you know, you expect that from a Luke Fickell team. I don't think a lot of people have watched Houston this year. I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, it's Dana Holgerson team. It's going to look like that West Virginia team that took Oklahoma to the limit in 2018. No, that's not what this team is. This team shuts you down. Doug Belk.
That was one of the best games of all time that you just mentioned.
I was there. It was incredible. That was a face
melt. I'm so jealous that you got to see that in real life.
Oh, it was awesome. I believe there might have been in some Tudor's Biscuit World.
Talk dirty
somewhere,
to me, dude.
Somewhere in there. it was outstanding. But this is going to be a defensive struggle. And really, it kind of comes down to Des Ritter, Clayton Toon, who can make a play. I'm probably going to say Des Ritter. I'm going to lean that way because he's been doing it for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, you have no choice but to lean that way. You know, I mean, Cincinnati is in a position right now where they're being viewed as one of the four best teams in college football this year. You know, and I don't know why anybody would want to fade them now. So it's funny. Clayton Toon, I feel like, has been in college for 20 years. So, you know, maybe the experience at quarterback there, if they can make a few plays and, you know, get the defense on the field and get Cincinnati off, you might find yourself in a game. Wouldn't be surprised if this wasn't an easy cover for Cincinnati, especially with the conference championship on the line. But I'm on Cincinnati to win the game. Like, I don't think they're going to lose.
We got one more before we get to Atlanta, and that is the one that has zero playoff implications. Pittsburgh is a 3-point favorite against Wake Forest in the ACC championship game. The number is 71. Ari, take the freaking over.
I will.
No one is stopping anyone in this game.
Are you betting on a Pitt game in conference championship weekend? Is that what I just detected?
Are you freaking kidding me? I didn't even think about this. I didn't even think about this. I'm not betting on Pitt.
I'm betting on the circumstances of the game. Those are the rules. It's not whether you bet on Pitt or against Pitt. You're betting on a game that Pitt is involved in, which means it's
Ari. I watched Wake Forest Army and I watched Wake Forest North Carolina. There's no way these two teams are not going to score a billion points combined.
The last time you were this convinced of an over was last year. And then you ended up having to do something really stupid because it didn't even come close. And I'm just telling you.
Oh, yeah, that was Arkansas Ole Miss. Yeah. I remember.
Conventional wisdom.
Oh, God.
Conventional
wisdom. And what was Arkansas Ole Miss this year, Ari? It was 53-52.
You're a year late, bud. I think that makes sense what you're saying. I just know Pitt's involved, so I am, for that reason, I am out.
I hate you. You have now ruined this game for me. I was excited about this because I was going to have that second screen up watching the Big Ten.
Yeah, you can still enjoy it. Just don't put your money in your mouth on it.
I don't really feel like I have to pay that close of attention to the Big Ten because there's going to be a lot of moving the ball around between the 30s. Like, this one is just shock and awe.
I mean, honestly, this is one of the best conference championships of all time. Because there is a legitimate chance that Wake Forest could win this football game.
Of course.
And win the ACC. Wake Forest winning the ACC, Michigan winning the Big Ten, Cincinnati making the playoff, Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State all missing the playoff all in the same year, and a defensive player winning the Heisman. Like, this is what we're talking about right now.
Extremely possible. Ari, I do want to ask a little trivia question here. Wake Forest last won the ACC title 15 years ago, 2006, the Riley Skinner team. Do you remember what the final score of the ACC championship game was that year?
There's no chance I could answer that question.
Wake Forest beat Georgia Tech 9-6.
Bet the over, bud.
This is going to be the opposite of that game.
Yeah.
I don't care that Pitt's involved. I'm going to be right. Damn it.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know if we can, if you want to make a bet right now, but I'm automatically taking the under. We can have, we'll use this as Twitter. We'll get Twitter. I'm on the under.
Well, all right. Yeah. Whoever can come up with the most creative punishment, we'll use it. If the under hits, I got to do something stupid. If the over hits, which it will, Ari has to do something stupid. And I will play the Too Legit to Pitt video a million times. Even if Pitt lost, I don't care if Pitt wins or loses. I just need them both to score a lot of points.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Atlanta, Ari. Let's go to freaking Atlanta. Georgia, 6.5-point favorite against the mighty Crimson Tide of Alabama.
What did we both say at the beginning of the year? It's funny. We're
Georgia's
in December
win
now.
A national title.
I'm not fading Georgia now.
No.
No, I'm all over
it. I think Nick Saban has told me all I need to know about this game. Nick Saban has spent much of this season managing my expectations with regard to Alabama. Not anybody else. I'm not drinking the haterade. I am just listening to what Nick Saban has been trying to tell me all season. When he's giddy after close wins against teams that they should blow out, I notice that. When he's just completely over the moon after a 4-overtime win against an Auburn team that was playing a backup quarterback who could not even walk by the end of the game, I'm listening to what he's saying.
That's really
and what he's I saying is they're not going to beat Georgia.
Every single so I'm a dude with a bunch of male friends who participates in a gambling group chat like everybody else my age. And every single friend of mine that's in that group chat has sent me a text in some way or the other this week saying I'm on Alabama money line. I'm on Alabama plus 6.5. I'm on Alabama. I'm on Alabama. I'm on Alabama. And I think that the natural instinct for anybody who gambles or has gambled on Alabama over the course of the past 10 years is to, if you get 6.5 points, I don't care who they're playing, I'm taking 6.5 points because Bama getting 6.5 points is undeniably impossible to pass up. And I'm telling you right now, they are going to lose by more than 7.
I don't see how this does. The only way this doesn't happen, and I think, you know, I played the clucking my tongue at the other Heisman voters card and don't just randomly pick a quarter. I think it's actually turning that way. I think Will Anderson probably now is the favorite to win the Heisman, and I'm glad, and he's had an amazing season. And I think even if he has like a 2.5-3 sack game, I still think Georgia's going to cover.
It's just a matter of whether or not you think that Alabama's defense is unlike anything
I'm
that Georgia's seen.
I'm worried about Alabama scoring.
Are you, and don't take this as me being judgmental, are you at all considering being hesitant about Georgia because of Stetson Bennett, or are you all in on what he's capable of?
No, I think he's fine. And he is the best quarterback that they have on their roster for the situation. He has made that abundantly clear this year. He is not. Now look, quarterbacks get better over time. Mac Jones threw 2 pick-sixes in his first Iron Bowl, which was his second start. He didn't make those mistakes again.
Mac Jones is in a walk-on.
Stetson Bennett was not good in his first game against Alabama.
Was Stetson Bennett a walk-on?
They were winning at halftime. He was a walk-on.
I can't get it out of my brain.
Yeah. It drives you crazy. Because it destroys
me insane.
Your theory. But
no, it doesn't destroy my theory. It makes me wonder if playing against Alabama's defense, if part of that walk-on blood is going to be coming out. Because it's easy to kick the crap out of some of the teams they've kicked the crap out of. And I know they've got a very good running game, but when Will Anderson is doing the water boy standing over the... Yeah, they were healthy. You're right.
Completely healthy.
How many offensive touchdowns did they score?
Oh, that was zero, but they won the game.
You just like totally made my point for me. They couldn't get a first down.
This is not a good end of the show for me. I've had a bad late show run. My performance is pitiful.
I've been screaming at you for 70 minutes, so I understand.
I'm terrible at arguing right now.
I do think, though, that Georgia will cover the 7. I am a little wary about Stetson Bennett on this stage.
I will make my argument, though, vis-a-vis the Clemson game. He's got a lot more weapons now than he had then.
Yeah, and he's a season better. Like
Brock Bowers was in his first game. Darnell Washington wasn't playing. George Pickens may or may not play now, but he could possibly be available. Kyrus Jackson wasn't playing receiver. He was just returning kicks. So I think Georgia's offense is in a much different and better place than the last time they played a team with this level of athlete on defense.
Also, you want to hear how stupid we are? Stetson Bennett didn't play the Clemson game, so that's completely irrelevant.
Oh, you're right. JT Daniels played that. Yes, what am I thinking?
It's 10 o'clock.
They would have scored a bunch. I wonder how long the Georgia fans have been yelling at their
radios. It hit me that he didn't even play in that game.
JT Daniels played that game. He had the oblique injury, and everybody thought it was going to be Carson Beck, but then Stetson Bennett started, and that's how he sort of took it over.
That's correct.
Seth Emmerich isn't going to kill us, by the way, for getting that wrong on the show.
Hey, we're all over Georgia, though. You know, and by the way,
this is a podcast, by the way. We could just take that part out. But because we love you and we want you to know how stupid we really are, we're leaving it in.
Yeah, nothing about this podcast has ever been about being right 100% of the time. That's no standard that anybody can meet. So, you know,
Being wrong is actually much better for the show, I would argue.
And also, admitting that you're wrong, I think, is something that people can appreciate. But the one thing I will say is we were right about our preseason prognostication of Georgia. And everybody at the time said, oh my God, they're just going to choke it off again. They haven't won a national title since 1980. And we were both just like, look at that defense. Look at the talent on that roster. This is the year. And look at the path. They've made it through the path beautifully. Now they have to win the game that everybody had circled before the game started, and I'm very excited to see it happen for their sake.
JT Daniel, now it's got it in my head. JT Daniels completed 73.3% of his passes already against Clemson, averaged 4.5 yards per attempt. They were not moving the ball through the air very much then. They've gotten to be a much more explosive offense with Stetson Bennett running it.
Is Jameson Williams playing for Alabama in the first half?
He was ejected in the first half of the Iron Bowl, was he
okay,
not?
Okay, if it was the first half, then so he's playing. I just didn't know if he was out. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, if he was suspended for that would be just...
Because I think Alabama couldn't get a first down after he left the game.
Yeah.
So... Anyway,
that was absolutely brutal. But we've said all this, Ari, and we've also talked about how wrong we can be. Would you be stunned if it's just Alabama 34, Georgia 30? Or Alabama 24, Georgia 20?
Nothing would stun me.
That's the problem. When you have the level of talent Alabama has on its roster, because go back... They've played games that give you tons of pause. But go back to the Ole Miss game. If they play the Ole Miss game that level, if they're as good against Georgia as they were against Ole Miss, does Georgia win the game?
Yeah, I mean, that's the entire stars matter thesis, in my opinion. It's not that every single team that has stars is automatically great. It's that when you have the talent at that level and you turn it on, there are no teams in college football that can beat you. But the good news for Georgia is they also have the stars. So to me, I don't know that I would be shocked if Alabama won the football game, but I think that it's pretty evident with all the information that we have right now that Georgia's a better football team this year. And I know it's a helmet game, and everybody just is going to bet on Nick Saban, and maybe he's earned that right. But in my opinion, and before the year, but during the year,
you are all over a Georgia cover. Georgia by a touchdown.
Because I have faith in their, I have faith in their defense, and I got done watching Alabama not being able to get a first down against Auburn. So, like,
and I, like I said, we should believe what Alabama's been telling us. We should believe what Nick Saban's been telling us. I know there are some of you out there who think there's a conspiracy theory, or, you know, that there's a conspiracy and that Georgia will just lay down so that the SEC can get two teams in the playoff. I can guarantee you that will not happen. For Kirby Smart's psychological health, if they can beat Alabama by a million, they will. Like, they have to do, they have this to isn't get just over this
year.
Hump.
This isn't just this year. This is a hump that transcends the narrative of the direction of the conference. This is just a game. This is a huge game.
This is for, from a psychological standpoint, very similar to Michigan, Ohio State last week.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be certainly as cathartic.
And we'll see what happens. Ari has to go clean some prune juice now.
And you have to go look at your ceiling fan as a going to bed, knowing that you bet on Pitt again.
Damn you. Please, please be kind to me, listeners, as you come up with a punishment for this. Please be kind. That's all I ask. We'll talk to you Saturday night, and we'll have a lot better idea, at least we think, who's going to make the playoff. Can't wait. We'll talk to you then.